This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 124 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, we will be going Dutch with AET in Amsterdam. Here's your host, Woody.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Today, we have a very special guest from over the sea in the lovely land of the Netherlands. From Amsterdam, I'd like to bring you AET. How are you doing?
Hi, Woody. Thank you for having me. I feel quite honored. Yeah, lovely to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. You were recently in New York.
Yes, that's true. Actually, I was first at an event in a different state, and then I was in New York, and, well, Shermie was a nice tour guide to us, and we enjoyed New York City. Yes, we did.
Well, Shermie has promised to come and do the Kinky Cast here this summer when he comes down to Tennessee, and So we're looking forward to that. I saw you in the travels up there, and so I reached out and said I'd like to have you on the show, because You bring a couple things that we don't normally get. First off, there's a perspective. You are sitting over in the Netherlands, which is a very liberal country, sexually liberated to a large degree.
Yes, it is. And also in our marijuana, you know, our drug laws, we're quite liberal. And in the way of thinking, yes, it's like, it's not like Las Vegas, but it's in city for you guys. For us, it's normal.
It is normal. And so you can exercise your kink in a more normal way. I've seen many things on the streets of Amsterdam.
Yeah, anything will fly. In Amsterdam, it doesn't matter how you're dressed or what you're doing, or you can do whatever you like within certain limits of the law. And still, there's wiggle room, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lovely country.
It is a lovely country. And I lived there for 6 years, and I do miss it in many ways, because it was a great life. The lifestyle in general is very good there.
Well, if you ever get over here, you know, I know where the party is at, so please send me a message.
There it is. So on that, you identify as a sadist.
Yes, I do.
And that's a good thing, because I have a very large sadistic part of myself. Mm-hmm. One of the things we had talked about is that you are into fear play.
Yes. I don't know where it really came from, but it's a lovely subject. And it's difficult to tackle in the beginning with your submissive or bottom, however you call your bottom. But if they have confidence in you, you can have really memorable place, and they won't forget it. So I really enjoy having that deeper structure. And I also like some role playing. So talking about fear play, I own my own dentist uniform. I can be a dentist if you like.
I love it. Okay. Yeah, many people fear the dentist.
Yeah, that's why. And I also take up some workshops that are frightening for me, for example, by electro. You know, I'm not like a beta person. I studied economics, and I don't grasp that concept of electricity that well, but I wanted to learn and get that, nail that part down, because a lot of people are afraid of electricity. So it forces me sometimes in a path that I'm like, but it's for scaring people. Okay, then it's a good.
It does scare people. I'm an electro top myself, and I can certainly withdraw feelings of, what are you going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's really about, there's, I don't care that much about what the technique is that I'm using. I can also do like emotional fear play. Yeah, that's more close to the heart. The bottom is scared, and you pull them through the scene. It's a great present, and they arrive at the end of the scene conquering their surreal fear, because I don't play with real fears, you know, like traumas or phobias. And they exit the scene really empowered and great that they overcome that. And for a top, it's also a nice gift if they're willing to try it with you. So
Let's break down what emotional fear play is a little bit. How do you get into your bottom?
Emotional fear play, you have to know your bottom a little bit, and they have to give you those signs. Of course, you're a sadist, so if you hear something, you'll pick it up. But there are several types of emotional fears that people have. For example, the fear of rejection or not doing it right. Or aside from that, it's also a nice tool if you have a really experienced bottom or a bottom that's really pragmatic and they think, oh, I can always safe word out of it, or my top won't do that. It's a hard limit for me, or it's a soft limit. They won't do it. You can tackle emotional fair play on those bottoms as well. And it's, if you're a little bit experienced in it, it's success guaranteed. Play with those feelings of the heart. It works beautiful on people that are deep in their submission towards the top, because they don't want to feel the top. Fail. Yeah, sorry. It's the accent.
The accent is wonderful. I'm just sitting here listening. It's very nice.
You love those accents over there.
I do. When I lived over there, it was wonderful because I heard it every day.
Okay.
So getting into somebody's head and finding where their buttons are and pushing them and things like that, you can take somebody very deep into space.
Yes, that's true. Do you mean like subspace they're not really present?
Let's see, we do use the term mindfuck, to where you're kind of directing them down one path and then you take a sudden turn and take them down a different path and leaves them off balance. And, you know, you can really get them off into different kinds of space, subspace, or just kind of an unstable condition to where you're playing it and you're keeping them walking on one foot sort of thing.
I identified three types of fear play. One of those is, of course, and they overlap. One of those are the mind fucks, that you promise to do something and you don't really do it. The actual fear play, where you promise and deliver what you want to do. The third one is the non-consensual consent play, where I call it carte blanche, because non-consensual consent is a big word. Everybody has a different definition. But when I enter a non-consensual consent play, I, for example, discuss or negotiate with the bottom that I'm allowed to place one needle anywhere on their body. And of course, I will take something terrifying, a place like underneath the fingernail.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and they don't have like a stop sign, because it's, they gave me the carte blanche, the non-consensual consent to do something with one needle in their entire body. So that's the three types I personally identify as fear play. And of course, they overlap a little bit and the bottom doesn't know which one you're going to choose. But I think like really the fear play, like when you promise to do something and you do it, and a non-consensual consent one, has the return of when a bottom exits the scene, they will feel empowered. And with the head fuck, they feel a little bit disappointed because they were afraid and willing to conquer their fear and they were not allowed to. So yes, that's sadistic, but you know, it's called play. It can be nice for both. And sometimes you do a head fuck. It's also funny. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear the difference there, because I think we had grouped a lot of those together before I had this conversation with you, and you've really kind of laid it out better.
I discovered until now shame, failure, unaccountability. That's really, for me personal, very important. If you promise something, you have to be on time or be accountable, untrustworthy, rejection, and disgust. That's a harsh one to do as a top. I always love my bottoms to pieces, and I'm very proud of them, what they are willing to give me, doing for me, and to play, like almost like, for me, it's role-playing. But to do a role-play of really disgusting your, letting them feel the disgust. Oh, it's difficult for me, you know?
Okay.
I don't hate it because it has a beautiful result, but they twinge in their eyes and they go like, do you really disgust me? And it's horrible to see what they encounter, but the same output when you tell them, this is a lovely scene we did, and I told you a lot of nonsense, and I'm really proud of it, and you endured it beautifully. And please regard or disregard everything I said with you, to you, because it was of a play. And then it's okay, but it's difficult for top and, of course, for bottom, but I don't know that. I've never been a bottom.
So it's play acting to a large degree.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you feel it in your heart and it's difficult, but it has a lovely end result. But do it with somebody you know quite intimate, and not in a sexual way, but in a mind and heart way. Yeah, then it can be a lovely play.
Sounds very interesting. I'm going to have to put that on the list.
Poor bottom.
Uh-huh. Yes, she's listening to the cast right now.
Hey, oh, yeah. Do you think you can pull it off? Really discuss act like you? She discussed you?
Well, I guess I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, please do. I'm curious.
Me too.
There's a funny thing, but it's not well researched. Women, when they have fears, like they go to a horror movie, they get excited and seek the comfort of the male for protection, and they get aroused. But men, when I do fear play with men, well, the little machine downstairs or the big machine, it doesn't really work because they're really terrified and they are happy it's over, but they don't get aroused. It's just my, you know, because I do it a lot, and my general perception. I didn't met a guy yet that got an erection of fear play.
I think it's a protection mechanism. You know, they're putting their concentration elsewhere instead of on the sexual aspect.
Yeah, but women do get aroused. But then I am a lady that does with other women. Or ladies, fear play, and I'm not the male protective. I have muscles. I can be quite tough, but there's an aspect missing, but they still get excited, even though I'm a lady top.
Well, but you're a power figure. It may not just be masculine. It may be a person of authority that can take care of them.
Okay. Thank you for saying that, but I always stick to being myself, and if other people think that's authority or dominance, it's fine by me.
You are an alpha figure. You know, I can see that right now.
Well, thank you. It could be.
So you do play with other women, so you identify as bi?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I had even a relationship for 5 years with a woman, and I have several... Yeah, femme bottoms, you know, that are quite feminine, but gay. I really enjoy my time with them, yes. And I have male submissives, bottoms. I think in the States you have more like those boxes where people identify and you're expected to live by those rules. Here in the Netherlands, we have the difference between sub and slave. And because FetLife came over here, we have a whole new list to choose from.
Like, hell yes.
Pet sounds nice. Oh, mistress and owner. Oh, that even sounds better than just mistress. And we don't know what the ownership part means. So please don't pick on me because I don't know what is expected of a little box, a title over there. We're more free-flowing.
You're certainly more fluid in the way you're looking at it. And I think Americans do like to nail things down into something. Oh, well, that fits in this box. And so I know what you are. But the mm-hmm. fact is, to know somebody, especially in this lifestyle, we're more complex than that little check mark that goes in that one box.
For instance, I call myself or I identify as a hobbyist. For me, it's a hobby. But my partner is a lifestyler. What's the difference? I don't know. I, at this point in our lives, I'm more active in the BDSM scene than he is. For me, still, it's a hobby, something you do in your spare time. When I exit my front door and go into vanilla life, I am... still the same person I am in a scene, but I would never try to, use some of the BDSM tools to get what I want. It's a hobby for me. If I have spare energy and time, I do BDSM. And for other people, it's a lifestyle. They are whatever title, 24/7 a day. I couldn't do that.
24/7 is a hard thing because life gets in the way. You have jobs, you have duties that you have to do. And especially mm-hmm. people that have kids. The kids are going to end up topping them all the time anyway.
That's true. How awkward would it be if you get somebody all tied up and then, mommy, or a toddler tantrum. Ah! Oh, my gosh.
Well, it happens. It certainly does.
But you have also the thing called cats, and they like all flying objects. So if you flog her and then the cat thinks, oh, that's nice. And you have a cat in your back. I heard that a couple of times as well.
Brings new meaning to cat of nine tails, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. It's true.
Or nine claws in this case. All of these things in play, whether you're in a dungeon, whether you're playing in a residence, you end up with having to deal with the parts of life that fits in, whether there is a neighbor that isn't particularly enjoying your scene, for instance.
Okay, yeah, that's true. And I didn't really think about it that much because in Amsterdam, the houses are small and quite the opposite of soundproof. So I go to a lot of play parties and dungeons to play. Yeah, if I want to practice a new technique or a new situation, then I tried in somebody's living room, but mostly I play at play parties because the room or the noise, it's not in Amsterdam. It's, well, we're a crowded nation, I think.
And especially in the summertime when all the windows are open.
Yeah, without, you know, curtains and stuff. Yeah, we do that. And we have nice little trinkets to, you know, display. And there are little kittens or little windmills. And you look at them and you go like, really? Is that what you're proud of? Okay. But, hey, liberal country, do whatever you please. Place a dildo in front of it.
The fact is that you are doing what you please is probably the most important thing. The way you live your lifestyle is important to you, which obviously it is. Then do it.
As long as you accept that you're a subculture, you're not mainstream. So mainstream, what a general Dutch person will act for, that's mainstream. We are a subculture and we have to respect the mainstream. Same with Islamitic cultures. They can have like mosque over here, and but they have sometimes a little bit more difficulty to accept that what is mainstream. In the Netherlands, if you accept that you are a subculture, then you're fine and you're free to do whatever you want because you respect the main culture and you won't offend the main culture. So if you stay in that gray area, you can place your dildo in front of the window if you like. Mm-hmm.
The Dutch society is based on tolerance.
Yes.
That is something we just don't really appreciate here in the States because it's very easy to get discriminated on about the way somebody lives their lifestyle and you should be doing it.
Yes, and even though you really try really hard, it's still in the sub layer. There are some discriminations going where we in the Netherlands, I don't know, it's the first generation of a foreign culture that creates the difficulties. Then you have the second generation that adopts our values, like the mainstream of being Dutch. And the third generation is not that often a problem. They're more Dutch than what their grandparents are of culture-wise. And I don't know what it is we do, but it works. And now we have, of course, a big stream of people coming from Syria. It's a first generation. Okay. But if you look how we interact with Islamic people or with Indonesian people that was a former colony or with Suriname people, it's really nice. And I don't see a difference between a person, POC, person of color, or somebody that's Caucasian. I have friends and I don't understand that there's a difference because it's adopted in our culture.
It's a more open society and it has been for hundreds of years.
Yes, it has.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things I really enjoyed about it. And when I learned about the tolerance out there that I could practice things in my house that are my business and nobody's really going to judge me for how I wish to live my lifestyle. If I wish to live with a male and a female in addition to me in a household in a poly relationship, nobody's really going to care, you know, as long as I don't offend their children.
Sometimes have to do a little bit of explaining in your social community because they wonder and we're quite curious. But no, in the letter of the law, it's okay. And we have same-sex marriages and the same-sex can adopt. And yeah, really, it's quite liberal. And we can place our bikes wherever we like and do other enjoyments that are well known to you folks over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the red light district.
Yes. I love taking tourists to the red light district because it's always a little shocking to them.
They're beautiful, the women over there. I was so amazed.
They are. And the thing is, many of them are married. Many of them are, you know, have families. And this is their job. They go and they work their hours just like you would work it as a waitress at a restaurant. They have health coverage and pension plans. And
they like their job in general. Mm-hmm. That's also important to stay. Nobody's really forcing them to be there because the government is policing to outlaw human trafficking. So they try their best. Of course, there can always be one person that is against her will there. But most women indeed are married and are enjoying this type of income and interactions.
Well, the fact that it's regulated brings a certain credibility to it. And so the underground is discouraged from getting into the active red light district. Yes, there is an underground. There are places where human traffic occurs. But if you go to the public red light districts around town, it is very obvious that it is a regulated, accepted existence. And, you know, it's window shopping. You can find some very nice things in the window.
Yeah, it's a Dutch saying, kijken, kijken, niet kopen. It's called watching, watching, don't buy anything. Window shopping, indeed. Uh-huh. I've been to the red light district and I went window shopping and I was really amazed about the beautiful ladies and nice presence they have and a nice smile and kind and warm. And I was really, really amazed and I thought, well, sometimes perhaps it's good to regulate some things.
Every shape, color, and size.
They have, yeah.
Something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. You didn't even talk about the windmills and the wooden shoes. A lot of people think we have windmills all over the place and we walk on wooden shoes and always wear orange. We don't. We have some windmills and we're quite proud of it. But yeah, we don't dress in orange and we don't wear wooden shoes. Some of us in the agricultural part of the Netherlands do wear wooden shoes. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned wearing orange. Let's explain that to those who have just tuned in on this. The whole orange order and things that happens in...
Is there an order?
Well, in Northern Ireland, they have the Orange Order, which is actually based on the House of Orange.
Okay.
And so some people do relate it to that.
The top of a flag you can have, it's a view. If you have your national flag, and then you have we call it a wimple. I think it's a view. Well, it's on top of the flag and it's orange and and our royal family is called Orange. And if they are present, I believe, well, the orange states that we're from with the house of the king and the queen at King's Day or Queen's Day. Nowadays it's King's Day. We wear orange and have a lot of flea markets and parties and we wear orange. It's our national color. So if we play soccer, Most of the time our team is in orange, and it's our national color because, I don't know, it has something to do with the history of our royal family.
It goes back to Willem of Orange.
Thank you. I should do my research a little bit more, being 50% Dutch.
What's the other 50%?
Norwegian.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not that blonde and not that tall, but I have some Norwegian characteristics.
One of the other things you do is foot torture. When I think of foot torture, let's see, you have bastinado and different things in there. So what do you do to feet?
Of course, it's a general scope where bastinado has its place in it, and that's caning the feet. Yeah, I like torturing the feet in general. I love feet. I'm sadistic, so perhaps that's why. And I like torturing them, and I do like the toys you have for nipple torture or for cock and ball torture often fit the feet. But you can also set them on fire, heat them, cold them, place needles underneath the finger toes or somewhere else, or wax. I took it a little bit broader because I like handling the feet. And, yeah, I like torture, so let's combine them.
Oh, you are so sadistic. It's wonderful.
I don't know what your play style is, Woody, but I guess you have some sadistics in you as well, and I can learn.
I do. Ah, yes.
I don't know where it came from, but I also like everything with shoes. And often I ask people to sign my shoes, and I'm very, I started out trampling people, and I trampled somebody's teeth recently, or like 6 months ago. Yeah, that was a new experience for me, standing on somebody's mouth.
With a high heel?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. But yeah, I the beautiful thing going back to feet is they don't bruise that easily. They're quite sensitive and ticklish. People are sometimes ashamed of the way their feet are shaped. But also if you go where nail is growing and you have those little curves, I just take my dentist tools and place them in there and it hurts like a... I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh, you can swear. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be fined.
We were doing mind fucks earlier, so it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, true. Yeah. Mm. So, they're quite sensitive. And when a bottom didn't experience that much or none on their feet, it's a new experience. So they're extra heightened in their sentence. Yeah, I don't know. I have something with feet. Blame me. Yeah.
There's a lot of people that have different kinds of foot fetishes. And
I know. It's quite broad.
It is. And I know some people here that just love to look at feet, take pictures of feet. They post hundreds of pictures of feet on their fet page.
I'm quite common to our foot fetish scene. And I did model for quite a time and went to a lot of parties and... eventually, I just wrote the organizers a message. Is it okay for me to torture feet because you adore feet? Am I going to offend somebody over there because I can do it at home and I don't need to do it at your party? But trampling people, that's quite hurtful if you have like 9-inch stiletto heels. So am I allowed to torture feet at your foot fetish party? I was.
Well, that made you a very happy girl.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to get more people into it because if you're masochistic, it's a nice pain body part. So why not?
And one of the other things you do is caning. You're an advanced caner.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do. Some. Great things. My partner says I apprehended it to an Olympic sport.
Okay, there you go.
Compliment. My pace is quite high and I can do three in one hand or two hands, or I have mean spots. I have smaller canes for really weird spots. During my last conference in the States, there was a little buzz going that I caned somebody's tongue. But I also like the feet and the calves and the cheeks and the armpits. And yeah, I do tend to go to different directions and enjoy my caning quite a lot.
Cane materials, you know, there's woods, there's plastics, and they all can get very specialized in the type of sting that you wish to impart.
Yes.
And I imagine you have a large collection.
It could be larger. It's the same thing as with shoes, you know. You never have enough.
There can be more.
Yeah, there could be more. Yeah. Well, there's just like the purest thingy going on. A cane should be from rattan. So when we call something a fiber cane, it's not from rattan. So, but who cares, you know? But just be sure what we are talking about. Are you talking about like a wooden implement or a fiber implement? Because the density difference. And if I give my caning classes, I tell them I have a smaller rattan cane and you can hit closer to the bone. But it doesn't mean you can hit with a fiber cane close to the bone. So that's the only thing that I'm just like, something we call something a cane, okay? Is it made of rattan or is it made of fiber? But I don't want to be like the specialist or something, you know? You can just say cane.
That is a very important definition that you make there, because, you know, the weight of rattan is relatively low. It can impart a very good sting, but it's not going to do physical damage that a stick, a piece of wood would do, or even a piece of plastic. Plastic is very dense, and you could do some real damage with it. So caning is a learned art form, and to be good at it without damaging your play toy, and that's kind of a bottom line there. You want them to live to play again.
Yes, yes, don't break your toy.
Yeah.
I don't like worrying off people. Yes, of course, ask before you do. But with common knowledge, you go a long way. We already said, like the rattan cane, it's the smaller you go in size, in the diameter, you're not really going to break something.
True.
So I don't want to discourage people with their creative thinking and trying, like, ooh, could I cane an earlobe if I can aim very well? So the reason why I give a caning advanced class is a struggle. Sometimes people think, yeah, it's a cane. I can whack with a cane. What else can you learn? What I do in my caning classes, I improve the aiming if necessary. And I make it quite visual. And they enhance during the class. And it's always very rewarding for me. I explain different materials. And it's okay to prep. But when you want to aim that little spot, like your cheek or your thumb, you really have to aim well. So wrapping is okay, and it's extra delicious for a sadist and perhaps for some masochists. You have different types of canes, and I like people to be creative with canes, not just one, perhaps two, perhaps weird spots. Calves are so lovely to cane because, again, the bottom is mostly not used to it, and it gives a nice reflex. And with a calf, you can hit with any type of cane, and it will be fine, and you have such a lovely time.
Well, there's so much muscle there that, you know,
yeah,
get some nice reactions.
That's a place where you can cane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you go to, like, more hazardous parts of the body, then think of which density am I holding, and can I aim accurately?
Caning a ticklish spot is kind of fun because you can get that balance between a tickle and a sting. You mentioned earlobes, which I find interesting because I've never thought about caning an earlobe. I am going to try it, though.
It doesn't hurt that much. Yeah. It's more like a mindfuck.
Anytime you're around the head, it's like, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? And, oh, I don't want marks. If you play a lot with women, so if you take the cheeks, for instance, you know, they don't like to have a mark in their face. Mm-hmm. And I guess some of the guys, they don't like it as well because they have to go to your office on Monday. But also the tongue, it doesn't hurt that much, but it's just a mental impact of the tongue being caned and, oh, my teeth and, oh, and my eyes and my nose and whatever. Yeah. It's, yeah, I guess we're going to the fear pain path again, but yeah.
You know, it overlaps, you know, you kind of go from one to the next.
I have a spell. I'm guilty.
Well, it has been wonderful talking to you today. I really do appreciate the opportunity to get a different perspective on this type of play from across the ocean. And we are getting more international in this cast. We're now heard in 152 countries, which is nice. So, I certainly thank you. Today on the cast was AET from Amsterdam, and I look forward to having you again.
You have been listening to episode 124 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we talk with B-Wise about WordWise on FedLife.